looked at really how states can and have responded to the international internet. Now, over time, so I've looked at jurisdiction. Now, what has become clear over the last 10 years, possibly before, is that there has been a sort of concentration of private power on the internet, and that states have been sort of piggybacking on large intermediaries, and we can talk about the big five, which would be Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple. But you can slightly expand that list and have in there as well eBay or Netflix, or there would be Twitter, would be another, yeah. And so I'm still interested in the international dimension. I'm more now interested in the relationship of states and corporations, and particularly of how states seek to use corporations for their purposes, for their regulatory purposes, and possibly the other way around. Yeah, so basically it's a sort of two-way relationship.
So you talk about the big five, they're all based in America. Do you think there's a reason for that? So you sort of talk about European imperialism, and obviously in this case, actually, they're all American companies. America never really had this wave of imperialism properly. It's a very American-European battle.
I wouldn't necessarily call it an American-European battle. I would, if there's any sort of, in terms of geopolitical power, any battle going on, it would be Europe and America against China and Russia, if at all.
Yeah.
So, for example, in my paper, I look at merger inquiries.
Yeah.
And it's very clear that, for example, the European Commission works in close cooperation with the Federal Trade Commission in the US when they make decisions of whether they allow mergers or not. But on that topic, actually, talking about mergers, I want to say that whilst I'm looking at a historical context and whilst I am looking at competition law in this paper, I'm neither a legal historian nor a competition lawyer. So that makes me in some ways quite unqualified to talk about it. Having said that, I think it's rather important that we move away. Now, I'm not saying there's no room for sort of subject specialism, but I think it's equally important that we sometimes zoom out and see of the sort of wider dynamics, yeah? And in a way, that's what I have done over many years, that I have zoomed out and say, well, how does this area relate to that area? Yeah, so, but the caveat is that I'm not a competition lawyer or a legal historian. Now, with America, whatever the history may be in terms of imperialism, there's no doubt that, you know, Silicon Valley is very powerful in terms of the online environment.
Yeah.
And that, of course, has implications for the rest of the world. Having said that, real competition does come from China. And when I talk about, you know, the big five, I'm not talking about Alibaba, for example, in China. You know, so there are very big, very important companies in China, which I'm really leaving outside the debate.
Yeah.
Although they might provide wider part of the framework.
Do you think they have a sort of similar relationships? Obviously, in China, the state is much more heavily involved. Could you say that the big five and other tech companies have the same sort of relationship in the Western world?
I suppose that is my overall hypothesis, really, or thesis in this paper, that I say that actually the European Commission, much as the Federal Trade Commission in the US, have been complicit in the concentration of market power in Europe, in the US. Yeah, so I wouldn't for a moment say that there's the same relationship as in China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there is an underlying support towards concentrated market power. And you see that in, you know, I'm mentioning a few sort of mergers that have happened over the years and in fact continue to happen.
Yeah.
And from the outside perspective, but not being a competition lawyer, you think, God, you know, why did they let Facebook merge with WhatsApp or with Instagram or Google and YouTube? Or, you know, so there are technical reasons why the European Commission would let these things happen. But certainly from a non-competition law perspective, it seems surprising.
So you talk about mergers, obviously most recently last year we had Microsoft and GitHub.
Yeah.
Sitting there sort of presents issues where you've got effectively one of the world's largest software vendors has purchased the world's largest code repository.
Well, I think all these mergers in a way are problematic because we end up only with a handful of companies that are collecting a huge amount of concentration of data about us, and in a way that's the the other argument I'm making in this paper, that actually states have an interest in co-opting these companies, and the fewer you have, the easier on some level the co-option into the regulatory agenda, and regulating us, the easiest way of doing that is through having control over data.
The last year has seen, especially Facebook, quite a lot of media attention, calls for regulation. Do you think the lobbying frameworks by Europe and the US would allow that to happen?
Yes. I mean, yes and no. I mean, there is, you know, a fair bit of activity going on, you know, in I can't think about the US, but certainly in Europe, in certain states, and on the European level, there are regulatory initiatives. The most well-known one, which really was the starting point, was the German Netzwerkgesetz, which is all about basically imposing duties on these main intermediaries to take down hate speech and other harmful speech within a certain amount of time. I think it's within 24 hours or something like that. So, but I think, you know, Britain is thinking of following suit in some way or other. The European Commission, I think, is working on similar proposals. So yes, that's definitely happening and would be in line. Basically, in these circumstances, in some ways, the sort of popular argument and the regulatory sort of policy argument in all these contexts is, yes, these companies, they make so much money, they have so much power, yes, they should get involved with the regulation. A problem really in these contexts is that the state is completely outsourcing adjudication and enforcement insofar as there is very little oversight. So if Facebook decides to take posts down, there is very little oversight from, you know, the judiciary, for example, to make a decision on whether this was over-censorship or not.
There should be judicial oversight, so obviously it wouldn't be practical when you've got such large... a large company, a large number of posts. Talk about the whole three P's, right? The philosophy, volume, sort of the variety. You know, are the judiciary, who at the moment you could probably argue aren't as technically literate, would they be able to intervene, and also think that intervention would be informed?
Yeah, I don't think for the oversight, and for example, in taking down posts, I don't think you necessarily have to be technically literate.
Yeah.
In the sense that we are talking about content, so you really need to be legally literate to make a decision on that. I do think it's a question of capacity, and I do think some form of oversight is required. And trying to think now, I'm thinking there are initiatives about auditing, basically watching the watcher, so auditing Facebook's decisions, or not just Facebook, you know, there are decisions by others, by Twitter and Google and so on, so that you can actually sort of rightly say that this is public regulation rather than outsourced private regulation. I suppose one of the sort of problems where your technical literacy might not come in is when you use automated processes.
Sure.
So when you use algorithms to make those decisions, which in some ways require even more oversight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, again, coming back to my paper, really, that is what part of the argument in my paper, that is regulating cyberspace is not, first of all, it's not regulating a separate space, but it's a space that impacts on the real world. And so I think a better way of talking about it is talking about networked society.
Sure.
Not to think about something that is separate. So how do you regulate networked society, which is really overlaid on our everyday activities in almost all circumstances. And I think here you have a problem of capacity, regulatory capacity. And the state with existing regulatory bodies, whether that's the judiciary or other commissions or so on, doesn't really have that capacity. Yeah, and for that reason, these big five or whoever these companies may be, become very attractive co-regulators.
And that's probably in part sort of due to the nature of their global operations. I think is it sort of, you know, the Google Spain case, the rights we've forgotten. So right now, obviously, those listings are only forgotten inside Europe. So do you think that's one of the issues where, because you know, you've got the territorial scope of the law, but actually the internet is not this, it's not confined to one territory, is it? Very much international. So how do you think regulatory agencies, you know, if they have capacity, how would they effectively enforce their decisions when actually, it's like Google, Google's got subsidiaries in most countries across the world. Is it too big to regulate?
No, in a way, for a company like Google, it's relatively straightforward to create different zones. So Google has, through geo-blocking, or geo-adjustments of some sort, can have an internet that is compliant with European law in Europe, and a separate internet, of course, they are overlapping, for the US, and a separate one for Australia. So companies, especially of that sort of caliber, are absolutely technically capable of matching their online spaces to political spaces, to existing political spaces. And from, you say, oh, enforcement, the thing is, this is in a way part of the point of this paper. I'm arguing that there is a sort of symbiotic relationship between states and these companies. So they each have something to gain from their interaction. States have to gain that companies cooperate when it comes to enforcing their law space. Companies have something to gain by states allowing them, for example, to grow, to merge, to make more profit, to pay lesser taxes, and so on. So this is not a one-way street. This works two ways. Now, whether we in the public interest are necessarily well served by that relationship, I am not sure. And the other problem, of course, is for the sort of innovative tech community, this is highly problematic. You know, these monopolies basically give companies the power to suppress competition, to say who's in and who's out, which they do very effectively. So either they sort of absorb competitors by buying them, or they kill competitors. And in terms of innovation, and there is quite a lot of writing on that, in terms of innovation, this is not good for the tech industry, that you have these companies there in the background that can, not in the background, in the foreground, that can make these decisions.
Google's advertising, some search engine business, quite often involved in litigation relating to that. Do you think actually, what deterrence or punishment do you think actually the European Commission, the competition, to effectively stop it? Because right now, obviously, a decision's made, Google pays the fine, everyone carries on, right? Because Google is so big, and these other tech companies are so big that actually they absorb the fine, it's fine. What sort of action do you think, or do you think states are willing to take such action?
That's the problem. In a way, these fines, they sound to us as if they are enormous fines, but actually I heard some statistics which I've now forgotten. Of their monthly profits, these fines are not particularly big. My perspective would be that you would have to be much more cautious with allowing mergers. And in relation to some companies, and I don't know whether it's Google or Facebook or others, certainly splitting them up, dividing them should certainly be a consideration. I think they're too big.
I guess we sort of end with, if you were to give me one prediction as a sort of, apart from that, where do you think we're heading in terms of these big five, and sort of what the impact be?
Now, bringing it back to the history, lots of people have responded to my paper by saying, look, the British East India Company didn't last forever, and at some point British Crown took over the control of India. Do you expect this to happen? Now, my expectation is that will not happen, because actually one major difference between the British East India Company and Google is that Google is actually over and above on some level any one individual nation state. Yeah. And that includes even the US. So I find it quite hard to imagine that the state will be able to control these companies in the same way as happened in the British East India context.
Do you think it'll be more sort of individual objection, which will actually drive change, rather than, you know, the state saying, oh, we're not happy with this? I think obviously you speak about the East India Company, that's towards the end of its lifetime, it's quite well known, and people are quite critical of its actions in India. Do you think the same is going to come for the Big Five, you know, any of these other large tech companies?
I do think that sort of civil resistance is pretty important in all the sort of political context, and that applies to the online context. I think you need really quite combined and strong for civil resistance to be able to present any sort of real counterweight to these companies. I do think that what's happening in Europe, that basically countries get into a block, so in a way, these merger decisions were not made by individual, European nations, but they were made by the European Commission. And I think the European Commission has, in a way, a lot more leverage than each individual state. Yeah. And so on that note, actually, I think if there's any real control emerging over these companies, it's got to come from coalitions of states rather than individual states.